Speaking of reliability. Friends talking about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
Hi, welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
This is Alex DeSell with Fluke Corporation.
Yeah, Alex, you know, we were chatting just before we got on a hit record here and a little bit about the, you know, our various companies we'd worked with and those kinds of things. And one of the things that struck me is that we both came into industry and dealing with data, with dealing with collecting information and either with like failure analysis type work or with trying to find patterns and forecasting types of stuff that's coming up. Is that fair? Has that been a big part of your career?
It certainly has. Ever since the beginning of my career, started out and working in quality control laboratories and where for production release testing data was very important. And for, you know, like I said, for production release. So we've definitely been dealing with data throughout my entire career.
Yeah, yeah. And you mentioned you were at GE, and I'm thinking of the, it's upstate New York. They had a lab where Wayne Nelson worked and a handful of other statisticians. Do you ever get a chance to deal with those guys?
I have. GE, Schenectady area, Crotonville. I was one of the few lucky ones that got to attend the GE University in Crotonville, which was the first university in the country for corporate training.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And there we have one of our global research sites there, and I definitely have connected in the past with the global research team.
Yeah, they were, I don't know if they still do that or not. We'll stay out of what's happened to their respective companies. But they had some talent there. And I know for accelerated life testing, Wayne Nelson basically wrote the book for that I still use and use all the time. But part of gathering all this data, though, is I know that you've heard of condition monitoring. And I know that now you work more with the asset management or maintenance engineering in looking at equipment and predicting when you need to do maintenance versus not. Now, the audience here at Speaking of Reliability may have heard of condition monitoring. Could you explain it just briefly what it is and how we use the data for that?
I can. Being out there for 30 years, I've seen the I'll call it an evolution, or maybe it's a change in terminology, but it seems like people end up following the same work practices or workflows when it comes to condition monitoring. For instance, a lot of large corporations now have reliability engineering departments where there's a group of reliability engineers that the whole idea is to try to, it has to do with asset reliability, and they're trying to avoid downtime.
Right.
Now, how condition monitoring applies to that is basically trying to collect information from a particular asset, let's say a machine. It could be several different types of indication to try to predict when this asset may be starting to have some issues. But on the flip side, I know many of us in this type of work have always had situations where we've had what we call bad actors or some sort of asset that had intermittent issues.
The one we're always spending time on.
Exactly. Yep. So that's certainly a good candidate for condition monitoring. And keep in mind, too, that condition monitoring is not necessarily, live sensors being installed on an asset. It could also be part of a route-based program just to collect data on, regular interval.
Well, when I was first out of the Army and into a factory, and I was a manufacturing engineer, and worked closely with our maintenance team. But Warner, our lead maintenance manager, I guess his title was, he could walk by a piece of equipment and put his hand on it, or he'd hear something, and he could tell that, oh, these bearings are going, or I need this motor's running hot, or he would do things like that. But he had you know, basically built that factory and knew every piece of equipment and what they should be doing and not doing. And that doesn't always work. I remember my Jeep in the Army, I could tell when something was going wrong because a wheel would fall off or something. But nowadays, we can't wait for that much of a problem, because then we get all kinds of collateral damage. We get poor products out, all those things. So, I mean, when we talk about condition monitoring now, it's bet more than just listening to it as you walk by.
Yes, it takes more than that. I think it, you know, to some degree, it takes a little bit of a cultural type backing, just from a different angle. You know, in my first years out of school, when I was working in the chemical plant laboratories in Louisiana area, Golden Triangle part of Texas, I used to go to all the rubber and plastics manufacturers, you know, DuPont, Dow Chemical, those guys. Mm-hmm. And there's one story I have they would have a quality control specialist, and all this gentleman did was take all the information from all the physical testing and what they would try to do with that information. And it were really good at doing it was looking at the different measurements for physical property testing from different ASTM type tests, right, and trying to predict how it would react to other testing. And they could actually catch problems early on based on, and they were taking samples from production every so often. By doing this QC testing, they could understand if any changes were occurring in the process. And it worked actually quite well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very similar to what I did as a manufacturing engineer. We were routinely sampling, and we had a wire and cable type plant, and we were making cables and measuring jackets and material properties through the process. We could provide feedback back to the extruder, or in some cases back to the DuPont was one of our suppliers. And we were often looking for ways to get at it earlier than later. Rather than create 10,000 pounds of scrap, we find the problem before we started the process. And I think that's the essence of this, to some extent, this condition monitoring, is using that data to find those indicators and trends and patterns, right, that signal that we're good or not good.
Absolutely. You kind of hit home there a little bit, because I dealt with a lot of with rubber and plastics processes, if really injection molding, extrusion, or calendaring, and mm-hmm. you know, dealt with a few of the cable manufacturers, and definitely can understand what you're talking about there, where they would basically try to, you know, I'm thinking about the old saying that, you know, mixing rubber is like baking a cake. You can never do it the same. You can never bake the same cake twice.
That's right. Yeah, you know, the humidity, all kinds of different things influence the final results you got. And it's why we use tolerances, and why we, you know, deal with blends and averages and all that kind of stuff. But no, the same basic concept, though. If I'm like, I know Warner is retired years and years ago. And one of the things, I saw you guys out at the SMRP conference, and that was late October, if I remember right, in Orlando. That was my first time at that conference, by the way. That was a lot of fun. There's a lot of good stuff there. But you guys were displaying and talking about this. It looked like a lipstick case size device. I was surprised by how small it was and all the things it could do. I mean, is that going to replace Warner in his ability to detect problems on the line?
Not really. I was at the SMRP last week, and the product you're talking about was a new vibration sensor we released earlier this year. And we've had a lot of interest in that device. You bring to mind that, yeah, you can collect conditioning monitoring data, whether it's route based or with sensors on various assets and indications. But it ultimately is what that data is doing for you. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the key to the whole thing. So how can the data be a use to you? How do you look at that data? What sort of math or do you apply to that data? How can it help you find problems before they occur, or find changes in your process or your asset?
Well, the vibration monitor provides a waveform, right? It tells us about the motion essentially of what it's sensing. And if I'm thinking of an accelerometer telling us how it's vibrating. So I think that's the essence of a vibration sensor. It gives us a waveform. And much like what we're looking at on our screens with the audio tracks. But you're right. What Warner could do was that he could sense that the vibration was different than it was last week. Mm-hmm. And so he processed it based on his years and years of experience of coming by and feeling, you know, the amount of motion that was on a system. But the sensor gives us a much finer resolution into that. But what do you do? I mean, so that goes off somewhere into somebody's desktop. And I mean, what's a way that you can use that vibration data that's much without Warner there looking at it?
Yeah, well, so that device we're talking about, our 3561 vibration sensor, does send the XYZ overall vibration data continuously. Plus, it sends a temperature indication as well.
Okay.
So from the minute you install it, your asset is actually being monitored, and at the time of setup, the user basically tells the software the machine category that's being installed upon, and so there are that we have known vibration levels for different machine categories that will alarm the user once they reach a certain level. So as a screening tool, it's excellent for cases where the customer wants to have an extra pair of eyes. When you think about the route-based vibration tools they have out there, which we have as well, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes when if someone's going out there to take a measurement on a semi-annual basis or whatever frequency it is, are you actually taking that measurement during normal operating conditions? Is the asset shut down? You know, with VFD drives, it can be different situations when you go take that measurement. By continually monitoring, you can actually see more of a granular type of view, and you can look at that data to try to correlate that with certain events like asset cycling, you know, when it's running, when it's not running, is it under load, mm-hmm. not under load sort of thing.
Well, I mean, if I'm doing this continuously, I know from my own experience that in doing more of the handheld sensors is that you need to spend quite a bit of time. And what we did is we would monitor for about 20 minutes every day. And then we got a baseline, essentially, of, well, this is how it should behave. And it sounds like you already have that kind of data already set up. If it's on a motor, this is the kind of thing you should see. It's typical. And then what we did is went back every week or every month, and when it gave us, twice the amount of X-axis motion, we said, well, that's really different. What's going on here? Usually we went back with a wrench and retorqued some bolts or looked at alignment or things like that. But is that what when I hear of condition monitoring, what I'm thinking, Alex, is that it's looking for that trend. And I think one of the ways I used it before was in a current draw. And we used it on motors. And as a motor would draw more and more current for the same amount of load or same kind of application we were using, it was a signal to us that something wasn't right with that motor. And so we'd do a more detailed preventative maintenance and inspection of it to bring it back into alignment, to bring it back, get it up on lubrication, make sure the bearings were good, all those kinds of things. But you could see it by a drift or a change in just the current draw.
Understood. Yeah. That's been my experience throughout my career. And I think it's important that the key word to all that is baseline and knowing what, I'm going to loosely use the word standard, if you will, right. And talk about standard deviation. But in a case where you're monitoring the motor, you know, certain things have to be checked off. For instance, if when you go and install the sensor, you know, is that actual asset been in, you know, is it spec'd properly? Has it gone through the startup and commissioning aspects? Mm-hmm. Has that been calibrated recently? But assuming all that has been done and you start collecting data on it, we do have some baseline alarm thresholds. But the ultimate recommendation is to collect a lot of data over a period of time and look at that data and understand what the normal operating conditions are and do some mathematics on it, you know, do some quality control type calculations like mean value, standard deviation, things like that. And that's what you're looking for. You're saying, okay, this is my normal, this is what we would call normal vibration levels. And then you spot, the software will spot the trend for you and alert you, say, hey, I'm trending off my normal operating condition. We don't know what the assignable cause is, but it's going to let you know that that's happening.
Mm-hmm. You're using some terms there, Alex, that sound like statistical process control. It must be your training in, at some point.
That was my training, right out working with those chemical plant laboratories. These guys were used it all the time, you know. And
okay.
It's very, and it's definitely still applicable this to this day. You know, it's the same. It's really the same thing when we're using talking about having how can a data be a use for you. And when you think about troubleshooting, there's no better way, cause and effect. You know, many times I've got called in on what they would call bad actors or assets after the fact. I'm trying to figure out what the source of it. And I always remember asking the customer, hey, can I see some data before, you know, you've had this symptom?
That's right. And then, you probably weren't successful with getting that all the time.
I wasn't. That's a whole nother story. But let's just say if I've always tried to push the customer, if you can get the data in there, it may not be used to you now, but it will be later, I promise you.
That's right. You know? That's right. Yeah. It's what keeps at least the reliability folks in businesses. Everything's going to fail eventually. And we work pretty hard to try to avoid that, minimize it. But so you mentioned that this little device that does vibration and it does power, or I'm sorry, temperature coming off of it. I know that you're seeing more and more of these handheld thermal imaging type stuff out of it. Is an on one location thermal sensor, is that as useful or than using a big thermal map, essentially, or view of a piece of equipment?
For screening purposes, I think it's useful, and I'll explain why. If you're just looking, let's say, a thermal image of a motor, who has the time to actually go in and you know, actually go out there, collect the image properly, which is not easy. You have to be trained in thermography. Number two, interpret the image and then understand, you know, what the different heat signature patterns are showing you. Have you actually baselined that? So
that's right. Yeah. It's not always you look at a motor and the one lead is just blazing hot and you know, oh, okay, something's really wrong here. It might be normal. It might be the way you set up the camera. I've been fooled by camera setups a few times myself.
Yeah.
But you're right. It's that baseline again is what is typical.
Yep. So the temperature indication on the vibration sensor, you know, typically we would put one vibration sensor over each bearing on a motor and you read the temperature in that area. And so if you think about it, you know, if you identify what normal operating conditions are for that motor and temperature wise, you start to see an increase in temperature that could prompt the maintenance team to go out with a thermal imager. And if they've already had their, you know, start commissioning baseline, they can go take a shot of it and find out, you know, get a bigger picture of what starting to root cause why the temperature increased.
You know, and one of the thoughts and we've got these sensors now that are broadcasting all this data back to us. And how do you deal with organizations that have way too much data already and don't use it? How do you get through that? Because it's great to collect data, but we've been talking about you have to use it.
Yes. Even when collecting the data, you run into things like what is the sample rate or how often do you want to collect that data? Is it every 30 minutes, every 10 seconds, what have you?
Mm-hmm.
I've learned, at least for me, throughout my career, is always try to push the customer to get the most granularity they could, even though it takes up a lot of space in their server. But you try to do that because ultimately that data become very, you know, a powerful tool for you. And in today's cloud-based type of technology, you know, it's not really an issue storing a lot of data, but you bring up a good point. What do you do with all that data?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of indications out there that go into some sort of historian But no one's really analyzing or looking at that data. And it's kind of reactive in a way, what I've seen for the most part. Mm-hmm. But there are definitely tools out there that can help analyze the data and spot trends. And, you know, as we talked about, using some SBC type tools can be one method of doing mm-hmm. that.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of where I was going with it too, is that the equipment can give you alerts and give you signals and stuff going out. But I think with that little extra effort of looking at it and getting a good baseline, setting up some triggers that it whether you're on a route based or a continuous monitoring, that it can signal something going off or causing problems, then it goes back to straight back to that condition monitoring, feeding into the maintenance team that, hey, this triggers a work order and let's go sort out what's happening here. And it's before it goes down, before it takes your line down. And I think that's the real value of it, is spend that little extra time and actually use the data, review it, look at it, and then trigger some real action afterwards out of that. It's not good. I get frustrated when you see a whole piles of data in these servers and, oh yeah, we collect it. We don't know what to do with it. I think that's an ongoing challenge for organizations. And it's not like you said, it's SPC type stuff, and that's been around for a long, long time. It's still very, very useful.
Absolutely. I think one of the things that could help steer in that direction would be when you know, procedures are documented, work procedures and maintenance workflows, instead of just going out and you know, doing a PM and collecting the data, there should be another few steps in there to actually take the time to look at the data, understand it, compare it against the last time, mm-hmm. and try to spot trends. And instead of just collecting it, putting in a report, and storing it on a CMMS somewhere and going nowhere, but ultimately people find themselves trying to, in retrospect, look at the data to see what went wrong.
Yeah. And I've been involved with a couple of those. And if they had been paying attention to the data, you would have spotted the issue 3 months prior. And then we wouldn't be down. We'd have the spare parts. We could have scheduled the maintenance. We would have been done. It's hard to not say, I told you so kind of thing. I try with clients. But it is usually right there. And it's, for organizations that are new at, you got to focus on it. You got to make it a discipline to pay attention to it. But it's very quick to show that it's exceedingly valuable. And I really like the sensor you guys have, because then I can pick it up and move it over to the next motor. You know, we get good baseline on this one. We move it down to the next piece of equipment and get good baselines on everything, and then rotate them through the factory. I don't need hard wires. I don't need all this other stuff on there. But it really is, the value comes from using the data and analyzing it and taking action on it. Is that a fair summary?
It is. You know, our you know, a 3540 three-phase power monitor is a semi-fixed measurement, mm-hmm. and definitely could be moved around from one asset to the next to collect data, baseline data, easily.
Yep. Yeah. All right. Well, you know, I think we're kind of covered this stuff. I think I should put a plug in here for an SPC course I have available on the site. But what I'd like to do is say, I know, Alex, you and the team there work with these cool sensors. And so if our audience, if you'd like to learn more about those devices and the equipment they have and get in touch with these folks to bring it into your facilities, head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/fluke. And that'll take you to a page that shows a bit of information about the range of products and a little bit about Alex and the other guests that we're bringing onto our various shows. And also, feel free to let us know if you have any comments or questions. You know, give us some feedback. We always are looking for you to join the conversation on the show. So we also look forward to that. So with that, Alex, I think we're about there. I know that when we were setting up this session, you were coming off of the SMRP conference, and then you were heading, I think, for another 3 or 4 weeks of travel for conferences and clients, I think, and so on. Busy time. Is it always like that for what you do, or are you, is this just the time of year?
It's the time, this time of year is especially busy, but throughout the year we have various functions and shows that we have a presence at. So the next show I'll be at would be FabTech next week, and then right after that, the Accelerate conference in Fort Myers area.
Okay. Man, you get around. It's racking up some miles. So if you happen to be at one of those conferences and look up Alex at the Fluke booth, and if not, I'm sure we can get you in touch with him if you got any questions, and we'll go from there. So thanks so much, Alex, for joining me on the show, and look forward to talking to you again sometime.
Sir, you're very welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.